This is Liliana.
I'm Danaya.
And I'm Badila.
And we're from Perfect 10 After School,
a wonderful club for girls in Hudson, New York.
And you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM ACRA.
Community radio for Columbia and Greene counties.
Perfect 10 girls got it going on.
Oh, yeah.
Tune in to the WGXC Afternoon Show on Saturday, November 14th for a special broadcast of Colleen Keough's Perpetual Drift. Keough writes, quote, "The Earth has undergone drastic climate changes, and a crew aboard a lost ship at sea struggled to adapt to an uncertain future created by a series of tragic events. The ship's crew are Aether, a transmission artist, the captain, the navigator, Echo, the mythical nymph, and the specialist, a scientist, a female scientist who specializes in rare botanics. The story embodies environmental concerns we face as a collective human family and the death of old structures giving way to new life forms, systems, and organizations. Tune in to Perpetual Drift, 4 p.m. Saturday, November 14th at WGXC 90.7 FM.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and Southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Marcus DeGrazia Acupuncture of Austerlitz, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. Become a WGXC sustaining supporter today. Go to wgxc.org and click donate. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about anything you hear here. There were 29 more COVID-19 deaths in New York State announced November 12th, including one in Albany County, two in Rensselaer County. There were 18 new COVID-19 cases announced November 12th in Columbia County and seven new coronavirus cases announced in Greene County. In Albany County, they announced 77 new cases on November 12th. Schools in Hudson announced a positive test of a staff member at the Montgomery C. Smith Elementary School, and Hudson Falls schools switched to all remote learning due to COVID-19 cases. The village of Chatham became the latest municipality to shut down its building and move back to all online meetings after the town of Nassau and Columbia County earlier shut down their buildings to the public. Rensselaer Polytech Institute is perhaps the only bright spot among local institutions, with 80,000 tests since August 1st and only 17 positive out of about 4,200 on campus this fall. As COVID-19 cases surge again in the capital region, the university's twice-weekly testing of all students is credited with keeping the infection rate on campus below 1% for any two-week period.
Columbia County officials Thursday, November 12th, closed its office buildings at 401 State Street in Hudson, and I quote, "in an abundance of caution," end quote, according to a short announcement posted at the county website. The closure was triggered by the news that two county employees had been quarantined after the possibility of direct exposure to people who had tested positive to COVID-19. Because of the Veterans Day holiday, county officials were unable to sanitize the building before it was due to open Thursday morning. For that reason, 401 State Street was closed to the public and staff was assigned to work from home all day Thursday until building departments and common areas can be sanitized. The building is expected to reopen during the regular hours of operation on Friday. As of late November 11th, Columbia County had reported 14 new cases for a total of 109 active cases. 27 people are currently hospitalized, two in ICU. There have been 43 deaths due to COVID-19 in Columbia County to date. And you can read more about this story at ColumbiaCountyNY.com.
Leela Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media that Hudson's Board of Estimate and Apportionment will hand the city's $11.9 million 2021 budget to the Common Council this week. The public hearing will take place November 17th, and the full council will meet November 19th to discuss and vote on the spending plan. The budget, as is, represents a spending decrease of just over $89,000. Mayor Kamal Johnson is awaiting word from the police union and the Civil Service Employees Association on whether their members will forego their 2021 contractual raises, which could result in an additional $100,000 in savings. Under the city charter, the council is able to make cuts, but it cannot add to the budget. The general fund does not include the cemetery, sewer, and water budgets. The sewer and water revenue are dedicated funds that must be retained by those departments, Common Council President Tom DiPietro said. The proposed spending plan does not include an increase in property taxes, Johnson said. Each of the city's departments will be working with a 2021 budget that is lower than or equal to their 2020 adjusted budget, the mayor said. The city's projected shortfall has decreased from $1.5 million to just under $500,000 due to budget modifications. If the police union and the CSEA agree to the city's request, the shortfall would fall to less than $400,000. Quote, the budget process was particularly difficult this year, but I think we did an excellent job making cuts while preserving essential services, unquote, DiPietro said. Quote, moreover, we managed to anticipate a possible decline in future revenue by keeping the budget under last year's, and at the same time, there will be no property tax increase, unquote, DiPietro said. Note, Johnson and DiPietro are both WGXC volunteer on-air programmers. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Ted Luce is reporting for the New York Times about the ongoing dispute between the village of Kinderhook and the school, a branch of Jack Shaiman Gallery. At issue, the black vinyl letters in the artwork, Truth Be Told. They measure 21 feet high and stretch roughly 160 feet across the facade of the gallery, the former Martin Van Buren Public School on Broad Street in the village. Artist Nick Cave created the work, intending to inspire a conversation about racial justice in the wake of the killing of George Floyd by Minneapolis police officers in May. But so far, the debate around Truth Be Told has been about whether the text-based work is technically a sign or not. The village of Kinderhook argues it is a sign in violation of local code and wants it removed. Shaiman and his attorney, William J. Better, say it is an artwork and is legal under the special use permit the gallery was granted in 2014 when it opened. Shaiman has until December 5th to appeal the decision, which he intends to do. Kinderhook Mayor Dale R. Leiser added that Shaiman, and I quote, did not have a permit. He got a use permit for banners, and this is totally different, end quote. The mayor said a secondary concern was the vinyl material that make up the letters and I quote, whether it's flammable or not, end quote. He added, and I quote, we are concerned it's covering windows and doors, end quote. Shaiman permitted a proposal to the village in August. Permission was not granted and attempts to resolve the conflict failed, but Shaiman authorized his crew to install Truth Be Told regardless. The gallery is now liable for a fine of $200 each day the work remains in place. Shaiman intends to keep Truth Be Told on view through January 31st. And you can read the full story in the New York Times.
Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics that new cashless tolling system will go live simultaneously at 58 tolling locations across New York State Thruways system overnight Friday, November 13th, and full operational the next morning, more than a month ahead of schedule, Governor Andrew Cuomo said in an interview on November 13th. Workers will be putting the finishing touches on the new system on November 13th in the evening, with drivers noticing the change the next day. The system is designed to speed up traffic at what will soon be former toll barriers along the thruway. Quote, you'll have a faster commute, unquote, Cuomo said in the interview. Quote, it actually increases the speed of the commute by 25%, unquote. Cuomo encouraged drivers to set up EasyPass accounts. Motorists who do not have an EasyPass will have a picture taken of their license plate as they exit the toll road, and drivers will be later sent a bill by the U.S. Mail. Read more about the story at nystateofpolitics.com.
Mike Goodwin is reporting for the Times Union. Former executive director of the state's Committee on Open Government, Robert Freeman, has resigned from the state bar. Freeman was fired last year after an investigation into allegations that he behaved in a, and I quote, sexually inappropriate manner, end quote, toward a female reporter. He applied to give up his law license as the Attorney Grievance Committee for the Third Judicial Department was conducting an investigation into his conduct. The committee did not oppose his decision to resign. According to a decision issued November 12th by the Appellate Division of the State Supreme Court, the court accepted Freeman's request to resign and ordered his disbarment. When he was terminated in June 2019, Freeman had been with the Committee on Open Government since 1976 and was a renowned expert on government transparency. He was a frequent contact for reporters and the public when they needed help navigating the state's Freedom of Information and Open Meetings laws. The state launched an investigation of Freeman's conduct after a female reporter for the Westchester-based Journal News filed a complaint with the state in June 2019. In addition to his inappropriate behavior, State Inspector General Letizia Tagliaferro reported that Freeman's work computer contained sexually explicit photographs as well as a series of, and I quote, sexually suggestive, end quote, email messages and photographic images that Freeman exchanged with another young woman using his work email account. You can read the full story in the Times Union.
And Rick Carlin is reporting for the Times Union that Spectrum Cable TV's division in the Capital Region announced November 12th it will reorganize its staff, including minimal layoffs, according to a company spokesperson. The changes are part of an effort to put reporters deeper into the communities they cover and to get more users on the company's news app as well as on cable. Quote, today, Spectrum Networks announced a series of operational changes that will enable its news networks in upstate New York to expand on their local news programming by adding more community-based stories while expanding statewide coverage, unquote, spokesperson Maureen Huff said in a prepared statement. Huff said Spectrum had success with this approach in other markets across the U.S. She said the goal is to present more community-based content, including weather and news updates specific to the region. Reporters will be assigned to cover regions and beats. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day. Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, a chance of rain mainly before 1 p.m. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature high near 47 degrees. Friday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 34 degrees. And on Saturday, mostly sunny with a high near 47 degrees. And Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a low of around 31. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM. Radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Welcome to 2020 Talks, where we track the 2020 elections in uncharted territory.
Donald Trump is not going to succeed in changing the outcome of the election. I think most of the Republicans around him that have been silent in this moment actually know that.
Vanita Gupta, president of the Leadership Conference for Civil Rights, says President Donald Trump has put the nation's democracy through the ringer over the last 4 years, especially the last few months.
The litigation, the efforts, all of these things, the DOJ action, this is all an effort to sow chaos, disruption, and delegitimize the outcome of an election where an overwhelming record number of Americans voted.
Top U.S. cybersecurity officials came out last night to declare 2020 the most secure election in history. Steve Winchek with nonprofit Protect Our Election is deeply concerned by the disinformation he's still seeing.
It seems to me to be about the most dangerous and un-American thing you can do to claim that the system broke down just because you don't like the result.
Trump and his allies continue baseless claims of fraud where he's lost or losing. One recent charge, again lacking evidence, is that a voting software company used by 28 states deleted millions of Trump votes nationwide.
95% of the ballots that were cast have paper backups, and so there is really no way that corrupted digital voting machine could ever swing vote totals.
We're starting to see more key Republican figures break from the president's continued denial following Oklahoma Senator James Lankford's assertion that he'll, quote, step in if President-elect Joe Biden still isn't receiving daily national security briefings by today. Senators John Thune of South Dakota, Chuck Grassley of Iowa, and Lindsey Graham of South Carolina all agreed Biden should be getting briefings. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer urged his GOP colleagues to accept the results.
The Republican refusal to deal with reality is hurting our country in many ways, fighting the health crisis of COVID, improving our economy, and not compromising on national security.
Former Bush administration official and Republican operative Karl Rove wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal saying Trump's legal efforts wouldn't have an impact. He advised Trump to, quote, do his part to unite the country by leading a peaceful transition and letting grievances go. In Washington, D.C., Schumer, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi, and other Democrats in Congress renewed calls for a major coronavirus relief package, saying Biden's victory is a mandate for aggressive action to curb the pandemic. Here's Wisconsin Representative Mark Pocan.
Millions of people infected with COVID, an economy where one out of every five small businesses has gone out of business just since the start of the COVID crisis, and millions of people out of work at no fault of their own.
More world leaders have congratulated Biden, including Pope Francis. The second Catholic U.S. president, Biden will follow John F. Kennedy. From Pacifica Network and Public News Service and produced for television by Free Speech TV, I'm Lily Bulkey. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, the 13th of November. Remember, not wearing a mask in public is very bad luck. COVID is going up. Let's try to keep those businesses open. Today starts off brisk at 38 degrees this morning. Rain enters the area around 8 a.m. and intensifies from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. At about 4 in the afternoon, the rain comes to a stop as temperatures reach a max of 46 degrees. Overnight will be dry but cold. Temperatures drop to 34 by dawn tomorrow. That gives the higher elevations a chance at icing. Watch out. Tomorrow will be dry with a high of 48 at 2 p.m. Sunday, rain returns and temperatures will make it to the upper 40s again. The next high tides will be at 12:55 p.m. and at 1:12 a.m. The next low tides will be at 7:05 a.m. and at 7:37 p.m. Sunset today will be at 4:14 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:43 a.m. Looking way up, we see a mid-latitude coronal hole is releasing a weak stream of plasma that should reach us tomorrow. Solar wind speed is currently 384 kilometers per second at 4.6 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1, quiet. The current sunspot number is 27. This has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Happy birthday, Jill!
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Amanda Lees of Freehold, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
This is Brian DeWan. I leave my clock radio tuned to 90.7 FM so that when it goes off in the morning, the first thing I hear is WGXC.
Hi, it's Andrea Cunliffe with Hudson Mohawk Magazine. We're talking with Taina Asili. She's a musician, a director, a filmmaker, a producer, and a wonderful person who cares very much about society and political issues. So welcome and thank you for joining us today. You've got something wonderful happening soon.
I do. I have a documentary short that's going to be premiering at the International Puerto Rican Heritage Film Festival. And that's Thursday at 4 o'clock. And the film festival is actually opening, tonight's the opening night. So it's going to be happening all week long. Amazing filmmakers from all over Puerto Rico and the diaspora. So all over the US and wherever else we reside.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. You started an album about a year ago. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I released an album. It's called Resiliencia. And I released that last year. And I actually had my album release celebration at the Sanctuary for Independent Media at the end of March last year. Since then, I've worked on these music video documentaries based on the album. So the album is Women of Color Stories of Resilience. So I interviewed women of color and I composed songs based on their stories. And from those compositions, I put out the album, but I also started to work on this documentary series based on those stories. So Who I Am is the latest one. I think it's the fourth one in the documentary series that I've released. And this one is about a Puerto Rican professional wrestler and trans woman, performing artist, and all around creative individual. Her name is Paola Gonzalez, and she lives here in the Capital Region. Not all of the stories are based on women in the Capital Region, but this one is. And this is her story of finding joy and liberation through professional wrestling. And when I say professional wrestling, I don't mean like the wrestling teams in high school that you might think of, but like the WWE style, WWF style, slamming in a ring style professional wrestling. It's really fabulous. Paola Gonzalez. I did a smaller screening on Monday with the Albany Public Library. That's a part of a monthly series I'm doing with the Albany Public Library, where I am sharing these documentaries and hosting different people and different groups in our community to open them up for a community discussion. So on Monday, we had Paola, and it just so happened to be her birthday. So that was all extra exciting, and in our own voices. And we had a community discussion to follow the screening of the documentary. So that was our first sharing it with the public moment. And then obviously with the Puerto Rican Heritage Film Festival, it'll be a larger audience of people that we'll be sharing it with.
So this is a monthly event you have at the Albany Library?
Yes. So each month, it's the second Monday of every month. It's a workshop, and we're calling it a workshop, but it's really more of like a community discussion and kind of engaging in the topic. So next we will be screening Resiliencia, which is the name of the album, but it's also the name of the documentary short that I created to go with the album. And that one is a 30-minute documentary about sharing the stories of four women artists and activists in Puerto Rico about 4 months after Hurricanes Irma and Maria hit the island. That documentary I released last year, and actually won Best Documentary last year at the International Puerto Rican Heritage Film Festival, which was really exciting. That was like my first big award that I got for filmmaking.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
You're very active politically in protest songs and music videos. You've inspired social movements and justice and food justice and climate justice and prisoner justice. This is something that you've really focused on. It comes through in all of your songs, all of your work. So do you feel that art has a responsibility to society, to political issues?
I think that art is one of the most essential pieces of our existence as humans. And it's our human responsibility to care about each other, right? So social justice is really, the bottom line of it is really love and care for one another and recognizing that our existence is interconnected on this planet, and that we need to and must care about each other's well-being, right? And so an injustice to one is an injustice to all. And so art is our human birthright and our one of our most powerful weapons, tools to take care of one another, to resist injustice, to speak about it, to reclaim our joy, to reclaim our humanity in the face of inhumanity. So I don't think it's something that's particular to one person or another. I actually think that it's imperative upon all of us to use our creativity, you know, in these times to manifest a different world, right? A different world where Black lives matter, a different world where our earth is cared for and not being harmed, a different world where we have gender justice, where trans people are not going to be subjected to violence and discrimination, a different world where healthcare is a human right and education is a human right. So I think it's really just my way of contributing to that collective responsibility.
We've certainly been successful so far, and I think you'll continue most of your work based on women's stories. Is that consistent?
I wanted this particular album to be focused on women of color stories of resilience. Mm-hmm. I had and do have so many amazing women of color in my life who have inspired me. It actually started out as a residency at the Art Center of the Capital Region. It was just sort of like a kind of a songwriting workshopping type of thing. And then it moved into what we have today. But for me, it's more about approaching songwriting in a different way. So in the past, I've written songs that were inspired by my own personal life or maybe by movements that I'm a part of and inspired by that. But I hadn't ever written someone else's story before. For me, it was a process of deep listening and really taking the time to listen to someone's story, even if it was somebody that I already know, but really just getting an opportunity to listen, do some deep listening and see where are the places where I intersect, where my story intersects with their story and write from that place. And since then, I've had the opportunity to work in other capacities. So doing commissions with nonprofit organizations, social justice organizations that are doing work maybe on gender justice or climate justice issues, and being able to write from that voice, from that movement voice, and collaborate with those organizers. So for example, with the organization 1 Billion Rising, this is an organization that works on gender issues of gender justice, ending gender-based violence. I had the opportunity to work with them and create a song that not only from a US perspective, but now from a global perspective, which is called We Are Rising. And then we created a music video to go with it.
How would you describe your music? Because I'm thinking about how you would explain what your music sounds like, but there's everything there. There's everything. There's salsa, there's samba, there's reggae, there's jazz, there's punk rock, there's everything. And it's so energetic. It's so full of life and so exciting. How would you describe your music?
I would say probably all of those things. I it's very fusion. I like to move between different styles. It reflects my own musical interests. You know, I grew up in a Puerto Rican household. My parents loved salsa and other styles of, you know, traditional styles of Puerto Rican music. My father was a musician. My mother was a dancer. And, you know, we have other musicians and creatives in our family that runs very deep. So that's one piece. But then I was in the punk rock movement for a long time. So that is a huge element for me. You know, Rage and Rebellion is another important piece. I love hip hop, you know, spoken word and reggae. And I studied flamenco for a period of time. I still study a little bit. And so all of these different elements just get infused into the music. Art is as expansive as humans are. And so we can express ourselves with whatever tools we desire. So for me, I don't like to limit it to one particular genre. To me, it's just music. It's music that speaks to my soul, my heart, my mind, and then music that I hope to offer to our movements for social change.
Well, thank you. Anything in particular that you wanted to add? Is there a way we can get a hold of your music?
You can go to tainaasili.com. The International Puerto Rican Heritage Film Festival. You can get tickets online. This is like an opportunity to actually watch something, like a whole week of documentaries and films of all sorts that are going to actually feed your body, mind, and spirit. They're going to really feed us. And they're coming from Puerto Rico and the diaspora. And they are, anything that's in Spanish also has English subtitles. So it's bilingual. You know, anybody can watch. So yeah, I highly recommend checking out the entire film festival.
WOOC's Ben Saraton spoke with local musician Joan Kelsey.
Just last week, the singer Joan Kelsey put out a new record. It's a tender collection of folk-adjacent songs written and recorded quickly, while the world continues to lock down. The songs are quiet, yet rich and melodic and full of care for oneself and others. It encourages listeners to let awe happen in simple moments, like when taking the bus to Lansingburg. It also sounds very organically like our neck of the woods. Joan grew up in the area, has lived in Troy, and has even previously volunteered for the Sanctuary for Independent Media. House of Mercy by Joan Kelsey is out now via Philadelphia's Dear Life Records, available for streaming online and on cassette tape. I sat down with Joan in their backyard for a conversation about the record, going deep, and the purpose of songs on a crispy fall day overlooking Hoosick Street.
I'm Joan Kelsey, a.k.a. Jonah Moberg, a musician from around here, the Capital Region, currently living in Seattle.
You grew up around here?
Yeah, I grew up in Greenfield Center, New York, just a tiny rural town. Mm-hmm. But I lived in Troy for 5 or 6 years until this summer.
And you're back now for an indefinite amount of time, or?
I'm here for 2 weeks to just do some recording, and then back to Seattle, and then hopefully back in the spring to finish this album I'm working on.
And where are you recording the record?
With Rick Spatero, who's in Albany. He's a great musician and a great engineer and producer. So. Yeah.
And Rick recorded and played on the current record you just put out, House of Mercy.
Yeah, right? He did. He did a lot on that album. I mean, it was just the two of us because I think we did one session before quarantine. And after that, we sort of, had to, there were like a bunch of musicians signed up to play for it. And then we kind of scrapped the plan and just did the two of us. So he plays probably more than half of the instruments on that album, I would say, yeah.
You grew up here, you're here currently and recording in Albany. I noticed on the first track that there's a reference to taking the bus to Lansingburg. This seems like a very Troy area record. Maybe you could speak a little bit about what the area means to you or why it has an influence on your work.
I think it's the only place in the world that I have like a deep connection to. Like, I haven't spent a ton of time anywhere. Like, I've traveled quite a bit around the country, but I haven't spent deep time anywhere else. So it's just sort of like, if I'm going to dig deep emotionally, like, this is the only, like, land I have to dig in, you know?
Yeah, and it strikes me as, I'm most familiar with this current record, and I listen to a few of your other songs as well, but a deep emotional well seems to be really where you want to go with your work.
Yeah.
Is that something you're trying to communicate? Is there a place you're trying to get to with how you write and sing?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know what I'm trying to communicate. I don't really think of like songwriting as like an act of like self-expression or something, or like trying to like make myself known to people. But I do, especially on House of Mercy, I thought of it as like a prayer to be making the album. And I think, yeah, there's nothing worse than like a half-assed prayer. I do want it to be like as honest with myself as I can in those moments.
Yeah, the title is really evocative to me. You mentioned before we started recording that this is a quarantine record. It was written and recorded under this time of social distancing.
Mm-hmm.
And House of Mercy, it's like we're in our houses all the time. We need to find mercy for ourselves. It's a very evocative title describing quarantine.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if you could talk about what mercy means to you, either just in general or specifically on this record.
Yeah, that's a really good question. I've sort of like avoided thinking about that album title too much because... It just, it, like, the whole record I sort of wrote, like, just off the top of my head. And the album title was the same way. Just one day I was driving around and I was like, oh, like House of Mercy. I don't know where the phrase came from. That's the title of the album for sure. But yeah, I can... I guess, yeah. Mercy means a lot to me. It, yeah. I guess mercy is like the fact that like there's a point at which you can't get any lower.
That's when you need mercy.
Well, that's what mercy is to me, I guess. Is the fact that like it only gets so bad. You know. yeah. And that idea has a lot to do with God. I think I find God like at the worst point. And so it paradoxically is like also your like saving grace, you know. I don't know. I'm just sort of thinking of, you know, but that's, yeah.
That's great. That's a very interesting take on the record. I'll have to revisit. You said earlier that you don't think that songs are for self-expression necessarily, but if that's the case, what do you think songs are for, or what are your songs for?
Yeah, well, I think some people's songs are for self-expression, and that's fine. I have definitely written songs where I was just trying to take up space with my own personality, you know, but I shouldn't say that's like a rude thing to say about people's songs, but yeah, I don't know. My songs are just like to be there. I don't know. I don't have any like grand like idea about what I'm trying to do. I think I like think it can be like beautiful and that can be like enough.
Yeah.
Justification.
I think the songs on this record exist simply in this way, and that actually is a grand statement and a big accomplishment. So, yeah, I tend to agree with you on that. The record does have a lot of kind of like spiritual uplift in it. It does read like a prayer sometimes, or there's mantras, things about your spirit lifting, or letting things be, or letting things exist. Did you find peace in making this record? Is this like a document of a certain kind of tranquility that you were able to find this year?
Yeah, I think I did. I think I found peace like in the process more than I had before. Like I usually, and I'm sort of back to this now in my writing, like will like really kind of worry about it a lot and grapple with each line and like try to like really like force together the song in a way that, you know, has structural coherence and that kind of thing. And this, with this album, I just like, so for whatever reason, I think because like I was alone all the time and like there was no one else, I didn't feel like I was like in some scene or something. I just like let it happen much more easily. And so the songs are looser and some, yeah. And yeah. I guess that I found peace like in the songwriting process. I don't think I had any special peace in my like personal life at that moment. Although quarantine was like nice. I like moved in with my partner and it went well, so that was good.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, this is your chance. You're being aired on the Sanctuary for Independent Media. This is going to live on SoundCloud forever. Is there something you want to say to all the people out there? Is there anything they need to know about you or this record or the state of the world? I know that's a big question,
right.
But I want you to interpret it however you see fit.
No, I wish that this is the kind of thing that, like, in my spare time, I think up answers for, but I don't have one right now. I just hope people like the album. I hope they listen to it. I think it's, like, I feel confident that, like, anybody could listen to it and find a song that they like, and I think it could possibly be helpful for people, too. And also, hi Melissa, if you're listening to this. Yeah, I don't have any grand. I hope everyone's doing okay. I hope everyone's like treating themselves well. Yeah.
That wish actually comes through in the record. It feels like someone is telling you to take care of yourself and to let things be.
So that's good to hear.
It's a nice bow to put on.
Nice.
Do you want to play us a song?
Yeah. Let me try.
Leaves of grass in the kitchen, and the snow moves on the lawn. I feed your cat and sing all we
Yeah, that was good enough for me. Thanks so much for doing this.
WGXC has two new call-in shows on the air. Every Thursday night, Kevin Shea and Matt Motel take your calls at 518-622-2598 on Gig Talk about musicians struggling without gigs, with unemployment, with venues closing down, and more. Gig Talk, Thursday nights from 8 to 9 p.m. on WGXC. And there's also Tech Talk, Mondays 7 to 8 p.m. on WGXC with Ralph Benko and Bill Collier, taking your calls at 518-622-2598 and 518-697-7400. Here's an excerpt from this week's Tech Talk with a caller's question about sine waves.
Good evening. You're listening to Tech Talk with Bill and Ralph, coming to you live from a secret location in the hinterland. You are listening to WGXC Radio 90.7 FM. Yes, we have Hank in Hastings, I think.
Oh, Hank from Hastings on Hudson. Welcome, Hank.
Hastings on Hudson. Bring it, Hank. Bring it to us.
Hello, how are you?
Good, good. Give us exactly what we deserve, Hank.
Oh, God, no, not that.
Give
Bill exactly what he deserves, but spare me.
Well, you often go into the lofty reaches of knowledge. I'm going to bring us very much down to earth because this is more of an engineering question, I guess.
Good.
But I have several power banks, and it's a line called Jackery. They're very good. And the bigger ones, you know, the ones that have more capacity, also say that they have a pure sine wave output. The smallest one has, I think, a modified sine wave output. And I have this vague impression, if I understood what I was reading, that the pure sine wave is better for electronics. But I wondered if either of you knows, does this apply to all electronics, or is it more for the higher life forms like laptops and iPads? And can I still, because what I'm still doing with my lowly iPhone, I'm charging that one on the modified sine wave power bank, and it seems to be working okay. I mean, I've not had a problem yet. But do you know anything about this? Do I have to worry about always using a pure sine wave?
Well, generally the pure sine wave is better. You can use a modified sine wave, but if you already have So if you already have a pure sine wave.
I have several power banks, and one of them has just the modified. The others have the pure.
So I'll ask you four questions. Is your device or appliance, does it use a motor?
Wait, Bill, before you launch into this esoterica, what the heck is a sine wave?
I'm not going to try to explain sine wave. It's a whole. It has to do with the frequencies that it outputs.
Huh.
As a matter of fact, the name of your station, or I think that your station's name is Wave. It's Wave Farm, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, so.
So I think that might be a play of words on wave form, which is the shape of a wave and different waves.
You have figured it out. Don't tell anybody.
No. I always look at that wave farm. I always get a little chuckle. Yeah. So sine wave, I do know, I mean, just from music, electronic music, I know that sine wave is this wave form that has a very smooth up and down, as opposed to some others that have a different, like a square or a triangular.
But that's all I really know. And I was just wondering whether this is a critical difference between the modified and pure. And if so, for what electronics do I need to be very careful and use my pure Steinway?
There you go, Bill.
So if you have a device that's using a motor, if it's a delicate piece of medical equipment, or if it's something that's really a fine-tuned device, you're going to want to have the pure. If it uses a rectifier or if it can be powered by a DC adapter, you're probably okay with a modified. Those are just two rules of thumb.
I'm sorry, because we don't have a great connection. What did you say before you said DC adapter?
So, and you probably don't have this, but do you have a device or appliance that uses a rectifier?
That uses an Apple?
A rectifier.
I guess I don't.
yeah, it's not a common...
Bill, what is a rectifier?
Yeah, what is that?
So...
Is that one of the things that those guys in the UFOs do when they abduct people?
You know,
no, that's how they landed that thing in Poughkeepsie last night.
Oh my God, really? In Poughkeepsie. Hello, Poughkeepsie.
Apparently a meteor fell.
A rectifier converts AC into DC. That's a lot
better. Okay. Converts AC into DC.
Yeah, so if you're not if you're using those things, then modulated is fine. I don't normally have anything that I have to worry about choosing sine waves on, but always go with the pure, baby.
Look, are sine waves anything like Seinfeld?
Less funny.
Although Seinfeld. Sine waves have more meaning in them than Seinfeld ever would or could.
Yes, but Seinfeld was a comedy about nothing, so that says nothing. How can you have less than nothing? You can't. Except, of course, on Tech Talk.
With a swastika tattoo, there is a vacancy waiting in the English voodoo carver. Deep mantle on the heel tip of his head. When he's had enough of that, maybe you'll take him to bed too. Teach him he's alive, or he wishes he was dead. Suspect even your mother won't detect it, so your father won't know. They think that I got no respect, but everything means less than zero. Hit, 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 hit. Oswald and his sister are doing it again. They got the finest home movies that you have ever seen. They got a thousand variations, every service with a smile. They're gonna take a little break and they'll be back after a while. Well, I hear the South America is coming in style. Turn out the TV, no one knows, none will suspect, even your mother won't protect it, so your father won't know. They think that I got no respect, but everything means less than zero. Hit, 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 hit. A pistol was still smoking, a man lay on the floor. Mr. Oswald said it had an understanding with the law. He said it heard about a couple living in the USA. He said they traded in their baby for a Chevrolet. Let's talk about the future now, we put the past away. Turn up the TV, no one listening will suspect, even your mother won't detect it, so your father won't know. They think that I got no respect, but everything means less than zero. Hit, 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 hit.
WGXC has two history segments tracking recent events. Rob Gellis, who does the Rob Around the County, Columbia County history segment, also does a This Month in History, and we're about to hear his November listings. And Corey McClaskland on the Thingularity Show lists more technological historical events on his listing. Let's hear both.
This is Rob Gellis with This Month in History, a chronicle of significant or infamous events in art, science, music, literature, sports, and more that occurred this month either in the near or distant past. On November 13th, 1956, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that racial segregation on public buses was unconstitutional. On November 15th, 1864, during the American Civil War, Union troops under William T. Sherman burned down Atlanta. On November 17th, 1869, the Suez Canal was formally opened after more than 10 years of construction. On November 18th, 1836, British author Sir William Gilbert was born in London. He wrote the lyrics for the famed Gilbert and Sullivan operettas. On November 19th, 1977, Egyptian President Anwar Sadat became the first Arab leader to visit Israel. On November 21st, 1783, the first free balloon flight took place in Paris. On November 24th, 1859, Charles Darwin's book On the Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection was first published. On November 26th, 1607, Harvard College President and founder John Harvard was born in London. On November 28th, 1919, Lady Nancy Astor was elected as the first woman in the British House of Commons. On November 30th, 1995, President Bill Clinton became the first American president to visit Northern Ireland. You've been listening to This Month in History, a monthly broadcast of historic events on WGXC 90.7 FM. If you have an event that you'd like to hear included in This Month in History, email me, Rob Gellis, at info@wgxc.org.
Well, we have about enough time to kick over to the Forgotten Geeks history.
What? Cool.
Okay. November 1st, 1932, Wernher von Braun was named head of the German liquid fuel rocket program.
Mikhail! What? No! Nainenzi!
Signing a contract with the Reichsar to conduct research that led to the development of rockets as military weapons. November 2nd, 1988, Cornell University grad student Robert T. Morris unleashed a computer worm intended as an experimental self-replicating, self-propagating program. It began replicating faster than he anticipated, clogging thousands of computers around the country.
Was that the first bugs?
Yeah, he sent an anonymous message to programmers on how to kill it and prevent the infection, but thanks to the route being blocked, it was received till it was too late. November 4th, 1939, Packard Motor Co. exhibited the first air-conditioned automobile at the 40th Automobile Show in Chicago, Illinois. The huge evaporator left little room in the trunk and could only be shut off by stopping, raising the hood, and removing the compressor belt.
Okay.
November 5th on this
day. No wonder when women didn't drive for a long time. Okay.
Speaking of which, November 5th on this day, 15 years apart, Marie Curie hit two milestones. She enrolled at Sorbonne in 1891 and became their first female lecturer in 1906.
Look up that family. It is a good, awesome history. Those people are freaking heroes.
Mm-hmm. That's 1992. Evidence of 5,000-year-old beer was found at Göden Tepe in the Zagros Mountains of Iran.
And it goes back even farther than that.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
Organic residue inside a pottery vessel believed to have been used for beer fermentation or storage.
Beer is the grape.
I think there was also some evidence of wine found a couple years later.
Yeah. Alcoholic beverages go back almost 20,000 years.
They go natural fermentation. They were around as long as we were.
Well, I mean, things rotted. What are you gonna do?
November 6, 2012, 4,000 residents in Athens, Clark County, Georgia, wrote in Charles Darwin as a protest vote against anti-science fundamentalist Paul Braun. November 9, 1957, Gordon Gould began writing the principles of light amplification by stimulated emission of radiation or laser during a sleepless night. November 10, 1983, Fred Kogan presented the first documented computer virus at a security seminar. Mm. He added it to a graphics program for a Vax mini computer.
Not anti-vax.
November 12, 1974. For the first time since 1833, a salmon was discovered in the River Thames in England. Victorian era sewage and waste had caused the once thriving fish to disappear.
Whoa, don't get me started on the Thames.
Yeah.
Circa 1854.
Yeah, Victorian and
they didn't. You know. Oh my God. Never mind.
Anybody that thinks that time traveling into the past is a good idea will note that story as a good reason not to. You're going to start throwing off.
Well, it took Parliament being made to stay in their own brand new building to say maybe we should get some sewage.
Yeah.
Here in London.
Maybe we should drink our own poop.
No, well, before that, it was all horrible sewage. But yeah, it was because of the big fires in London that they had to build a new parliament, and parliament was made to stay in that building and smell the sewage before they made an actual sewer system.
Yeah. No, yeah, I wouldn't travel back in time any further than like, the 70s.
Everybody smoked all the time.
The toilet around.
Maybe the 6th. Anyways, November 13th, 1971, Mariner 9 entered Martian orbit, becoming the first man-made object to orbit another planet.
Oh, that made me forget about one of the stories I wanted to talk about, or just made me remember. Keep going.
Okay. November 14th, 1922, BBC officially opened and commenced daily radio service, starting with 6 p.m. news. November 15th, a U.S. patent was issued to King Camp Gillette for the invention of a safety razor using disposable blades.
Yep.
1970, November 17th, Doug Engelbert was issued the patent for an XY position indicator for a display system, nicknamed a computer mouse after its tail-like cable. It was a hollow wooden box with a single push button. November 18th, 1963, the first push-button telephone in the U.S. entered commercial service in Pennsylvania.
The world of tomorrow!
I think there's an MST short that...
But there absolutely is. And we have the Space Needle in Seattle to remember it all by.
Mm-hmm. November 21st, 1953, the British Museum announced the Piltdown Man fossil was an expert fraud constructed from 37 pieces of altered bone and stone, including a thickened by disease human cranium and half an orangutan jaw with the teeth filed down.
Wait, wasn't that just like a publicity stunt for a mall? Oh, wait, that was the Simpsons.
Yeah,
they lost the wings on the transport. November 24th, 1859, Charles Darwin's The Origin of Species by Means of Natural Selection, detailing the evidence he had collected since his voyage on the Beagle, that species are the result of gradual biological evolution through natural selection, was published in England.
He would even experiment on his own children.
That's a scientist.
November 25th, 1948, Leroy Ed...
Transmission. We're a thousand miles from comfort. We could travel land and sea, but as long as you are with me, there's no place I'd rather be.
Hey, it's Gracie,
Sarah,
and Josie
from the Girl Scout Troop 1819, Coxsackie, Athens.
And you're listening to
WGXC
ACRA
at 90.7 FM.
Keep on being you.
The Radio Witch Moon Hotline is a recurring broadcast series
created by Jess Spear, Wave Farm's 2020-2021 Radio Artist Fellow. Spear writes, quote, "We are constantly surrounded by waves, vibrations, transmissions, traveling invisibly through and around us and carrying messages, information, 24-hour news feeds, talk shows, rock shows, data streams, conspiracy theories, sad songs, bad songs, operating systems, all of them whizzing around us. How many bummer vibes have passed through your home today, even without being picked up by a receiver? This is your chance to participate in a counterspell and leave good vibes. Call in at 518-302-6067 to be part of the Radio Witch Moon Hotline broadcast at 3:30 p.m. November 15th at WGXC. Again, that number is 518-302-6067. Call in with your good vibes and hear them on the radio 3:30 p.m. November 15th at WGXC.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Mid-Hudson Cable, serving Columbia, Greene, and southern Albany counties with digital cable, high-speed internet, and cable phone services for homes and businesses since 1971. Mid-Hudson Cable, all the right connections on the web at mhcable.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Laura Kuhn of Millbrook, New York. Sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about Creative Community Radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You, too, can become a WGXC sustaining supporter by investing in community radio every month. Go to WGXC.org and click Donate. Thank you for your support.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast, November the 13th, 2020. I'm Mike Clifford. An independent think tank has released a list of 10 actions it says the incoming Biden administration could take to support equal rights and protections for the LGBTQ community.
From the ban on transgender people serving in the military to administration support for religious exemptions to anti-discrimination laws, many LGBTQ Americans feel they've been under attack for the past 4 years. But according to Naomi Goldberg with the Movement Advancement Project, or MAP, President-elect Joe Biden can begin restoring protections immediately after he takes office.
We could see action at the agency level for housing and healthcare and education and the Department of Labor to make sure that legal protection for LGBTQ people are in place and that the federal government will enforce them.
MAP also has a list of legislative priorities, beginning with an update to civil rights laws that prohibit discrimination based on a person's sex, sexual orientation, and gender identity. I'm Andrea Sears reporting.
The group's complete list of administrative and legislative priorities is online. You'll find it at lgbtmap.org. Some Missouri policy experts say federal COVID-19 relief money should be allocated to help struggling families in places like Missouri and spur local economies.
The current supplemental appropriations bill under consideration at the Missouri State House would use federal COVID relief funds to replenish the state's unemployment trust fund. It would happen at the same time the state decreased the unemployment tax assessment for businesses. Tracy Gleason with the Missouri Budget Project contends a stimulus payment would put the money to better use.
These funds weren't intended to allow there to actually just be lower business assessments. We can get a better bang for our buck in terms of local economic activity.
Current proposals would allocate COVID relief funding to the Department of Public Safety, as well as for COVID mitigation, school nutrition, and other costs related to the pandemic. Gleason suggests lawmakers provide a $1,000 stimulus payment to anyone who has exhausted unemployment benefits and sending what's left over to the trust fund. Mary Sherman reporting.
Gleason adds many people who have been able to return to work are likely earning less than they did before. CNN reporting now that two senior Department of Homeland Security officials have been forced to resign by the White House, according to sources familiar with the resignations. Among them, a top official in the DHS cyber arm, Brian Ware, served as the assistant director for cybersecurity. CNN adds that the DHS assistant secretary for international affairs, Valerie Boyd, also resigned amid pressure from the White House. DHS and the White House declined to comment. This is PNS. Official results from the Nevada presidential race are on the way. Amid unfounded allegations of voter fraud in lawsuits by the Trump campaign, We get more from Lily Bolke.
The deadline has passed for absentee ballots to arrive if postmarked by Election Day, and so has the deadline to cure ballots or fix any mistakes. After counties assess and tally the last provisional ballots, the Secretary of State will complete the vote canvass on Monday, certifying the results before Nevada's 6 electoral votes are cast for President-elect Joe Biden on December 14th. State Attorney General Aaron Ford says all evidence points to this year's elections being free, fair, and secure.
Now, there's been no evidence of widespread fraud or any wrongdoing, and no PR stunt or piled-on litigation from the Trump administration is going to change that fact.
In addition to the fraud claims, Trump campaign lawsuits have alleged that GOP observers were being kept out of the counting rooms. However, Ford noted observers from both parties have been welcome until the maximum capacity was reached and there are too many people to properly social distance.
Some of the accommodations made because of COVID-19 may continue to be useful even beyond the pandemic. Illinois lawmakers have the chance to ensure that poverty is never the reason a person stays in jail. It's called the Pretrial Fairness Act. It's been introduced in both chambers and would reform the state's pretrial justice system and end the use of money bond. Chicago area State Senator Robert Peters sponsored the bill.
Every community in Illinois is impacted by a system that says that if you're poor, but especially if you're poor and black, and especially if you're poor and black and a woman, that you are going to have a caste or a tiered system of safety.
Some in law enforcement have raised concerns about the legislation, arguing cash bail helps fund the criminal justice system and that it is an incentive to ensure people charged with crimes appear in court. Finally, our Diane Bernard tells us conservation groups are applauding a federal court ruling. It blocks permit approval to construct the Mountain Valley Pipeline.
Some groups had sued the pipeline's backers, saying investors were told of the need to steamroll through critical streams as quickly as possible before anything is challenged. At the West Virginia Highlands Conservancy, one of the groups that sued, Cindy Rank says pipeline operators were trying to move ahead with construction without having federal agencies consider endangered species and their habitat.
The philosophy is frequently do it first and get permits later. Apologize later.
The Mountain Valley Pipeline is one of several energy projects backed by the Trump administration that has run into delays with court challenges by environmental groups. This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported, heard on great radio stations across the nation, and now viewed on Free Speech TV.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Mid-Hudson News is reporting Orange and Rockland Utilities and Central Hudson Gas and Electric are collaborating with UAlbany's Center of Excellence in Weather and Climate Analytics and Electrical Distribution Design to develop a new weather forecasting tool that will provide real-time predictions on storm outages, electrical load, and renewable energy generation. The information will be displayed on a customizable dashboard, and it can better equip utility companies to make decisions more efficiently on how to prepare for weather-induced power outages and variations in renewable energy production. The project is spearheaded by the Center of Excellence, and it will use a combination of New York State MESONET data and integrated system model to develop the tool. The state MESONET, headquartered at UAlbany, includes 126 standard weather observation stations statewide. The network provides real-time weather measurements that can help with situational awareness for both storms and renewable generation. The new forecasting tool will leverage other publicly available weather data sources, including sensors that are being installed now at large New York solar farms. Orange and Rockland and Central Hudson are also providing their own data from existing system models, which will be combined for the first time through this project. And you can read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Paul Nelson is reporting for the Times Union. Schenectady County Sheriff Dominic D'Agostino has asked the Schenectady police to investigate the brutal beating of an incarcerated man at the county jail by a guard at the facility. D'Agostino said he was disgusted by what he called a complete breakdown of the jail system. The jail guard and his supervising sergeant were fired after the guard brutally beat a man who complained about the time it was taking to release him from the jail, D'Agostino said. The beating was carried out on Monday, November 9th, inside an area of the jail where men change from jail garb into civilian clothing and where strip searches are done so the room has no security cameras. D'Agostino identified the former jail guard as Eugene Selly and now ex-sergeant as Timothy Bruce. D'Agostino said the man's injuries drew the attention of a parole officer who spotted him outside the jail after he was released. He was being treated at Ellis Hospital for broken ribs, a fractured collarbone, and other wounds. The victim was still hospitalized 2 days later. D'Agostino said, and I quote, "The behaviors exhibited by my officers is not nearly indicative of the expectations of my administration and how we handle business. I am very disappointed in the breakdown and disgusted with the actions, if they are in fact found to be true," end quote. The Schenectady County District Attorney's Office has also been notified about the incident. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. Nick Reisman is reporting for State of Politics. Dozens of advocacy groups are continuing to urge state elected officials to take up a clean fuel standard for the transportation sector. The effort began at the start of 2020, but then took a backseat to the state's COVID-19 response. Advocates are now looking to next year and the coming state budget talks in 2021. The effort is meant to tackle carbon emissions in transportation, one of the major sources of greenhouse gas emissions, and comes as the state is due to switch over to renewable sources of energy in the coming years. The pitch is based in part on not just combating climate change, but also creating jobs in the growing renewable energy field in the process. Julie Ting, the president of the New York League of Conservation Voters, said, and I quote, "A clean fuel standard would accelerate the transition to clean fuel technology, create jobs for New Yorkers, clean our air, and improve public health at no cost to the state, and create a new revenue stream for fleet operators to invest in clean vehicles and infrastructure like EV charging stations," end quote. A range of organizations that represent agriculture, auto manufacturing, renewable fuel companies, biofuel producers, and electric charging companies signed on to the letter. And you can read the full story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, the 13th of November. Remember, not wearing a mask in public is very bad luck. COVID is going up. Let's try to keep those businesses open. Today starts off brisk at 38 degrees this morning. Rain enters the area around 8 a.m. and intensifies from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. At about 4 in the afternoon, the rain comes to a stop as temperatures reach a max of 46 degrees. Overnight will be dry but cold. Temperatures drop to 34 by dawn tomorrow. That gives the higher elevations a chance at icing. Watch out. Tomorrow will be dry with a high of 48 at 2 p.m. Sunday, rain returns and temperatures will make it to the upper 40s again. The next high tides will be at 12:55 p.m. and at 1:12 a.m. The next low tides will be at 7:05 a.m. and at 7:37 p.m. Sunset today will be at 4:14 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:43 a.m. Looking way up, we see a mid-latitude coronal hole is releasing a weak stream of plasma that should reach us tomorrow. Solar wind speed is currently 384 kilometers per second at 4.6 protons per milliliter. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1, quiet. The current sunspot number is 27. This has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate. Happy birthday, Jill!
90.7 FM.
Acra, Hudson, Catskill.
Next, we have new music from Scanner from 2020. This is Atlantis Voltages from the Signal of a Signal of a Signal album.
Thank you.
Thank you.
From the 2020 album, The Signal of a Signal of a Signal, that was Scanner with Atlantis Voltages.